Do you know what the future you is up to right now? It could be working for UPS. UPS is now hiring part-time package handlers in Louisville. For select shifts, you can now receive bonuses up to $250. They also graduate debt-free through the Metro College Program. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com. Get there.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
Hey, 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 let's go.
Hey, 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 hey. Let's go!
Troll Pub, our location today, Troll Pub Under the Bridge. Partnering yet again, it's Troll Pub Tuesdays with ESP in Louisville. Certainly love hanging out here. Over 25 HD TVs with here in-house. All college football, basketball, NFL, NBA games. Phil Baker hanging out down here as well. I mean, good night. One-time intern Phil Baker hanging out down here. Now full-time... Renaissance man is one Phil Baker. He'll show up to remotes. He'll sell the remotes. He'll be on the air on Sunday Morning Hangover. He'll run the social media accounts. He does it all. And he's down. You can come down and say hi to him if you want to. I mean, he's here. I mean, might as well, you know, give him a high five for no reason. Over 25 HD TVs, which is the exact count, 25 and a quarter. Great before Cardinal basketball games, concerts. It is right next to the KFC Yum Center. Great food, great drinks, great atmosphere. The Troll Pub Under the Bridge, a unique underground dining experience. Our location today. Also, before we get our coaching carousel started, I wanted to give a big shout-out to Penn Station. They dropped off some really, really good food. So we appreciate that. Any 6-inch Penn Station sub every Tuesday for $3.99 when ordering online or via Penn Station app and using promo code UL399, celebrating 100th season of Cardinal football. That is Penn Station, the order online or the app, code UL399, and you get any 6-inch Penn Station sub for $3.99. Tex says, I would think Petrino would be super excited during the show knowing he's about to get $14 million. Tex said, too bad Bobby is gone. Jason's Bobby voice was just rounding into form. It's been 5 years in the making. So, I mean, if I didn't have it then, that was as good as it's going to get. Tex says, Bobby must have really did you wrong. He's down. Just keep kicking him. I mean, he's down, but he's down with $14 million. I mean, yeah, he failed. He didn't really do me wrong. I'm just not really a fan of people that are generally jerks to other people. I'm just not a fan of people that are general, you know, disposition being AHs. That's just my, I may be in the minority there. It may not be a common, you know, opinion that people hold. So there isn't a lot of me feeling bad for Bobby Petrino. He made his bed. He looked at everything as being inferior to him. Louisville was inferior to him the first go around. The Atlanta Falcons inferior to him as well. We know what happened as Arkansas. So he was looking at the grass being greener there. And then he goes back to Louisville or comes back to Louisville. And it's like, okay, well now he really wants to be at Louisville and he's changed and all of this stuff. And then you hear people that are actually around him still. And it's like, no, he hasn't changed. He's still the same guy. Like, a leopard's not going to change his spots that late in his life. Like, he may have changed in terms of his relationship with his family, but, you know, in terms of, you know, just the, I guess, general guy, that is. So it's not like me looking forward to kicking him while he's down. It's more kind of the baller move by Vince Tyre for setting up the meeting at 11 o'clock, knowing that that Bobby Petrino's taping his coach's show and is then going to go in and get fired. You know, I mean, that's this. That to me is, and then the press conference being in like a hoodie, which I don't know why that comes off as like, you know, even extra from that perspective. And also Tyree firing Andy Wagner and the family members, you know, whatever. I mean, that's whether they had to go or not. The Andy Wagner one is the one that I have no problem dancing. I have no problem enjoying that one. I have no problem kicking that one when it's down. That's not a big deal. I mean, that's a guy that was blocking everybody on Twitter. That's a guy that was enjoying being the henchman. That's a guy that told Russ Yeast that if you transfer, I'll lose my job. You can't transfer, Russ. When Russ was thinking about transferring, this guy who's making as much money as he's making to be the right-hand man to Bobby Petrino, the henchman, went and told Russ Yeast, if you transfer, I can lose my job. You have to think of other people beside yourself. I mean, that guy can go right out of college football. I mean, don't let the door hit you, all right? There's the exit, man. Texas says, is Jason using Bobby V's mic? Can barely hear him. Here's the deal. So the boy got sick. And by the way, when you have kids, you can blame every single sickness on the kid. It's like you were never sick before in your life until you had kids. Now, every time you get sick, it's clearly the kid's fault. So how did you get sick before that? I was never sick before that. Every time I'm under the weather, it's because of the child. So he was under the weather, and then we had his birthday party on Saturday. So we have a bunch of people over at the house. So, you know, I'm battling this cold. It's not nearly, knock on wood, as bad as some others have been. When Charlie Strong left for Texas, I lost my voice for 3 days. I was trying to host a show when we had the most listeners to that point that we had ever had, and I was barely even able to talk. That sucked. So I'm able to talk here, but I feel like the entire time I'm on the verge of being sort of that Bomani Jones when you have that tick in your throat, and it's like, help me. You know, Magic, if you can play the clip real quick, like that's what I'm on the verge of having that little, you know, frog in your throat, that little tickle, that little spot to where you can't get to. And you can drink as much water as you want, but eventually it just goes away. And that
Welcome
is not
back
good
to the
to
right
have
time.
When you're on the air. See?
My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
This is what. Yep, see? Right there. Oh, and he burped.
Help me. Oh.
He needs help. That's what I'm on the verge of. And so there are times when I sort of have to quiet down a little bit and not speak to the degree of enunciating as sometimes I can do, because I sort of it's constantly, I just feel it's right there just to go, ha ha, gotcha. All right, let's start a coaching carousel. We'll start off in Columbus. We'll go through these different spots to where coaches are named and at least thought of as maybe candidates not named Jeff Brohm. We'll go to Columbus. Tim Hall, 97.1 The Fan, our guy there covering Ohio State, as Ryan Day installed as the third betting favorite to take over with the Louisville Cardinals. Tim, how are you, sir?
Hey, guys, what's going on? Just another fun day up here in Columbus, reading some Brett McMurphy reports. But
why not?
Yeah, this is cool. Let's just talk about Ryan Day for the whole segment and pretend that we don't have a Brett McMurphy story going on up here. I like that idea.
Yeah, well, you've got Zach Smith sort of daring him over and over to Brett McMurphy. He's like, I dare you. I dare you. I dare you. I dare you. You know, do something else, Brett. I'll sue you. I dare you to come after me again. And
right,
Brett's like,
yeah.
Okay.
Here I come.
Sure. You know, it's like, you know, Zach Smith's the guy that's in the relationship, and the relationship is kind of rocky, and he thinks he's going to, like, win some leverage in the argument of, like, well, you know what? Then let's just break up. And the other side was like, okay. He's like, no, I didn't actually mean that. I didn't expect you to say, okay, I thought you would beg.
Yeah.
I dare you to report something else, Brett. Okay.
Jason, Damn. That's really good how you went with a relationship analogy for a guy like Zach Smith.
No pun intended at all.
He's good at those.
Yeah, no doubt, man. He's the best when it comes to those. He knows how to keep them together, certainly. All right, so let's talk. I guess I'll start off with this because when we're talking about anybody at Ohio State, I think it can start with, would they even be a candidate at Ohio State? So what is Urban's future? I saw, was it Bruce Feldman maybe earlier today that said he's still going with the fact that Urban Meyer is going to retire at the end of this year? I don't know how true that is. I don't know if that's just him throwing a dart or reading tea leaves. What is Urban's future right now at Ohio State?
Yeah, you know, look, this is, you can go back to, you know, Eddie George made some comments, you know, famous alum here, everybody knows him, the Heisman winner, about turmoil within the program, inside the walls at the Woody. But I'm kind of the opinion, too, that this is going to be it for Urban. That's just me. You know, I do a sports talk radio show just like you do, and I don't have a bunch of insiders there that I'm going to attribute that to. And I know, yeah, Bruce Feldman was saying something there, and you've started to see odds from some of the offshore betting sites pop up about who would be the favorite to be the Ohio State head coach next year. And you know, you had Jeff Brohm was pretty high up there on one of those lists as well. I can't remember which one, but I do just get a sense that it's going to be it for Urban. And it's not any one thing in particular. If I'm just going by what would I do if I were Urban Meyer, and we just got through this phase that was just so ugly. It took so much out of me. Whether I, you know, failed a little bit or not, just if that were me having my name just dragged through the mud like it was. And again, I'm not saying that it wasn't, you know, that he didn't deserve to have it dragged through the mud. But if you're just putting yourself into Urban's own mind, mm-hmm. in the way that he's actually thinking inside that head of his, that a lot of this was unfounded, that I was doing everything right, that's got to really wear a man down, like, from my point of view. And so I do think there's a real reasonable shot that this would be it for Urban. And a lot of us, when he took the job here, we were kind of putting it at about a, you know, 10-year arc. And so for him to complete 7 years, win a national championship, you know, from where we started, if we were making up that, you know, that over-under back when he took the job, that would seem a bit normal. Now, it would end under different circumstances, of right. course, but still, I think that's a good long run for a guy that was taking this job coming off of some, you know, questionable health issues. And again, yeah, the thing there, Jason, is that he really just admitted to having some pretty mild to serious health issues once again, just a couple of weeks ago. So, I don't know, man. If you were him, if you've been making $7 million a year for God knows how long, you live on one of the best golf courses in America, it's just, you got kids that are still young. He's a relatively young man as far as coaches go, too. I mean, he's not getting up to, like, Paterno or Bobby Bowden territory where you really start to worry for these guys, right? That when they leave college football, they wind up dying, like, in the next 1 or 2 years. It's like they need it to survive. I wouldn't want to be about that. And I know these guys are wired differently, but I think it's real. I think there's a real shot for it.
So if that's the case, if he's done, is Ryan Day, you know, a legit candidate, or it's Ohio State, they'll go out and get somebody, you know, I don't know, Lincoln Riley, or, you know, I don't know what other names would be there at Ohio State, Matt Campbell from Iowa State, some of the names that, you know, we're hearing even in Louisville. Is Ryan Day a candidate that he would take over for Urban Meyer, or would they look outside?
Ryan Day, of course, would be a candidate, to answer your question. Without a doubt, he's a candidate. Would he be their number one option? I'm not so sure, because I could understand it both ways here. Like, there was talk earlier in the season, and again, I have spent time wondering this, and I think you can poke holes in either side of the argument. Would Ryan Day, just with his mind for offensive football and what he's good at, would he have done better than Urban continuing on this season, figuring out the best way to utilize the personnel that the Buckeyes have on this team in particular? Would he have been better fit to keep this thing going? Now, again, you can say, oh, you know, Tim, that was just three games. Look how much TCU sucks now. Like, and again, I get it. Oh, you're being unfair to Urban Meyer. He's won so many games. You can't do that. Like, I can see both sides. And of course, he hasn't been a head coach before. And this is one of the top, you know, 3 to 5 jobs in America. Nobody really debates there, whatever your rankings are, 1 through 5. But it's up there. So you're definitely going to shoot your shot and scan all of college football. Yeah, you mentioned Lincoln Riley. He seems to be a hot name. I would certainly look at Lincoln Riley for his youth and where he is, being one you would go after more so than Matt Campbell, whatever his Ohio roots are. Matt Campbell, he's been a head coach for a long time right now, but has he really you know, been in the big time. He's one good season at Iowa State. And Ryan Day, with his experience already in the program, I know they think very highly of him and what he did getting them through the turmoil here at Ohio State. I do think it went a long way. I wouldn't kill it on Ryan Day being the head coach here. I just know they're going to explore other options, and out of no, you know, it's not going to be like anything against Ryan Day, because that's the man who's clearly going to get offers elsewhere in college football. Maybe it's right there in your town if Jeff Tom doesn't want to do it.
Last one. I'm just curious about maybe the person Ryan Day, and if maybe he's a guy that might be on the level of like a Brent Venables of holding out for like a really big job if his name continues to be bantered about as much as it is.
Well, that's, you know, I think Ryan Day, it's tough to gauge right there. He certainly has done a really good job with his image, because the things that he's said and what's come out of his mouth, you know, having his press conferences here at Ohio State, he's always come across as very gracious. And, you know, I wouldn't say like he's pretended to be just like the little kid in the corner, like, oh, I'm going to go back to my spot now that the big head coach is back. But he was like very complimentary of Urban Meyer, and he never really ran his mouth about how good he was. It wasn't like that at all, and I think that just also speaks to who this guy is, how much you would want him to be the face of a program. I mean, I think he, all these guys deep down, they know like how good they could be if given the opportunity. But he played it very cool, and he definitely didn't want to publicly step on any toes. He understood the situation that Ohio State was in. And I think he knew the last thing that he needed to do was to make things even more heated up here in Columbus by getting into a coaching issue with Urban Meyer. But when this guy gets his shot, I'm pretty sure he's going to be good. I think he's the real deal. I've seen enough of him here in Columbus to know that he's going to be good when he gets his opportunity.
Tim Hall, 97.1 The Fan there in Columbus. Tim, great stuff, man. Very much appreciate the time today, bud.
All right, Jason. Take it easy, man.
And we go to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington.
To Washington we go. We find our man, Dave Softy Mahler, KJR. Dave, how are you, sir?
You forgot the rest of that clip. And we're going to bring back the White House. Woo!
That's right, yes. Mike Leach is going to bring back Washington State football. That was the other one that was left out there. I'm curious. This team is, they're 9-1, Softy. How difficult was the job for Leach to be in the position he is right now with this team in the top 10 of the college football playoff rankings?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You tell me. The quarterback committed suicide over the offseason, right? I mean, that pretty much says it all right there. I think what Washington State has gone through, what their fans have gone through, what the coaching staff has gone through, and to be able to come out of it sitting here at 9-1, in the top eight in America is incredible. I mean, I'm myself no Cougar fan. I'm a bigger Husky fan than I'm a Cougar fan. But I've said it before. I think Mike Leach is the coach of the year in the conference. He might be the coach of the year in the country. Gardner Minshew is the player of the year in a Pac-12. It's not even close, to be honest with you, right now at this point. So I think 2018, if you're being honest, is going to go down as maybe the best coaching job ever for Mike Leach. And that goes back to his Texas Tech days, too.
Yeah, so this is a team that, and I don't disagree with that at all, and I think obviously the guy can coach his you-know-what off, and so maybe just in general as a program, because I know Mike Leach, the first 3 years, it took him a while to get up and running, and he was, 12 wins in those first 3 years. Year number three was 3-9, but 9 wins, eight
right.
wins, 9 wins, already 9-1. I'm curious from a bigger program situation. You mentioned coach of the year in the conference, maybe coach of the year in the country. To have, you know, four straight years at Washington State, 9 wins or 8 wins, 9 wins, 9 wins, and even, you know, more this year, what kind of job that is from a bigger picture standpoint of what Mike Leach has accomplished there with the Cougars?
Well, he's been able to score on every defense he plays except for Washington. I mean, that's it, and that's obviously a big one, because the Apple Cup every year, even in November, after Thanksgiving, Mike Leach gets destroyed by Washington, and that's happened now for 4 or 5 years in a row. As a matter of fact, the only win over UW that Mike Leach has is one where UW blew a 28-10 fourth quarter lead, missed a chip shot field goal late in the fourth quarter that would have given Washington the win. Outside of that, he's winless against Washington, and these games haven't been close. But outside of the Apple Cup, Mike Leach's offense, whether it was with Luke Falk, whether it was with Tyler Hilinski, or whether it was with Gardner Minshew or anybody else has been putting up points against everybody in this conference, and I would think that would travel. I would think that would go with him to whatever conference he coaches in.
Do you think he's interested in moving anywhere or leaving Washington State anytime soon?
I think he is down the road, yeah, because he was interested in leaving a year ago for Knoxville. I mean, he had basically accepted the Tennessee job. And then Tennessee freaked out and decided that Mike Leach wasn't a fit for Knoxville, which I'm not sure what that even means. I mean,
correct.
What the hell is a fit for Knoxville even mean, okay? I mean, it's Tennessee, for God's sake. So they just thought that Mike Leach wasn't the right guy. Philip Fulmer took over the coaching search and stepped in and said, no, we're not going to hire that guy. And he went back to Pullman with his tail between his legs and signed a brand-new five-year deal with Washington State. And is now making over $3 million a season at Wazoo, which, by the way, that money in Pullman goes a long, long way. Let me tell you, in Pullman, that kind of money, it's ridiculous. You could buy half the town, for God's sakes. But I just think, yes, does Mike Leach have an interest in leaving Washington State? The guy showed an interest in leaving 12 months ago. So, yes, I think he has an interest in leaving.
And I guess I'm sort of curious of the level of interest. Like Tennessee, you know, still has that historical precedent to it,
yes.
And won a national championship. But a team like Louisville or a team, you know, maybe like even, you know, Purdue getting back to the Midwest or you know, to this area,
right,
as opposed to being in Washington State. Or he views, you know, maybe it's easier to win a national championship at Washington State than it would be at those schools. Is he interested in leaving only if it's like a marquee big-name job? Or would he be interested in leaving if somebody was willing to pay him, you know, four and a half if Washington State can get there?
Yeah. I don't think for him at this point it's about the money. I think for Mike Leach at this point it's about proving that his offense can fly and work on the biggest stage college football has to offer. And although Washington State's having a good year this season, although they're being talked about as a potential Final Four team, I don't think they get there. I think Mike Leach knows that. I think Mike Leach, for the most part, knows he's probably maxed out his potential at Wazoo. I mean, save for making a Rose Bowl, the idea of him competing for a national title at Washington State just probably isn't reality. So I think he has to leave. And you know, I think, again, if a job like Oklahoma back in the Midwest ever came open, if a job like Texas, for example, maybe ever came open, I think jobs like that he would leave for. I can't see him leaving Washington State, though, for a job like Louisville. Just can't see it.
Do you think he's a guy that in his career, if gets the opportunity, he can make the college football playoff the way he coaches his system and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, if he has access to the best players that college football has to offer, and if he went to a place like Oklahoma, if he went to a place like Texas, if he went to a place like Ohio State, he would obviously have access to a lot better caliber player than he has over at Washington State. I mean, the idea of getting even a four-star recruit over in Pullman at Wazoo is not really realistic. So, yeah, I think if he, you know, that offense with a highly coveted offensive line, an incredible four- or five-star running back, one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the country, and throw on top of that a great defense with four-star guys all over it, I don't think there's any doubt that Mike Leach can win a national championship. I mean, look, dude, Ron Zook won a freaking national championship at Florida, okay? If Ron Zook can win a national title, then anybody can win a national championship. It's about the Jimmys and Joes. You guys know that. It's about the recruits. It's about your school's pedigree and what kind of you know players you can convince to go play there. Washington State is going to have problems convincing the top players in America to go play there. Thus, it's the system in Wazoo that keeps them in the mix and not the players. I'm convinced of that. You give Mike Leach the players, combine that with the system, I think this guy can win anywhere.
Cam Newton got Gene Chizik a ring. Won the ring and then actually gave it to Gene Chizik. He was like, wow, this
Thank
is awesome.
You.
I wasn't even there. I don't remember that happening. Last one,
Mark,
how much...
Mark Helfrich played for a national championship, okay?
That's a good
Mark
point.
Freaking Helfrich, who's got the personality of a brick, for God's sakes, all right? Give me a break.
How much, if you're guessing right now, last one, how many more years in Pullman is Mike Leach there?
I think probably three or four at the most. You know, I mean, again, it just depends on what comes up. But, you know, I think he's got a nice system going right now. He's got some nice players coming in and recruiting. But I think eventually Mike Leach gets a better offer. And I think Mike Leach had to do this for himself. You remember all the controversy coming out of the Texas Tech situation with, you know, Craig James's kid. And the further away he gets from that, the further away he, you know, kind of rebuilds his image and stays out of trouble and has people talking about him as just a football coach and not a clown and not a psychopath, like people were talking about when he left Texas Tech, which may have been fair or unfair, depending on who you talk to, the further he gets away from that, the more appealing he becomes, for sure. Yeah,
the man got Texas Tech and now Washington State into the top 10 multiple times in his career. Dave Softy Mahler, KJR there in Seattle. Softy, you're the man. Appreciate the time, brother.
All right, man. See you guys.
We're going to South Carolina.
to Charleston we go. Jamie Bradford, ESPN Charleston 98.5. Jamie, how are you, sir?
Oh, man, we're hanging in here. How are you?
We are doing just fine, man. Obviously, a lot of stuff to talk about and a lot of things to look forward to the next couple of weeks as Bobby Petrino now, you know, 48 hours when he makes that decision, and that's all the talk around here. Before I get your thoughts on the obvious of, you know, the defensive coordinator and Brent Venables, I'm sort of curious as maybe this just this entire year with Clemson, like this feels like with that team, it's a buildup of if they're not playing for the national championship, it feels like it's a failure or a disappointment. It's hard to call it a failure if you make the playoff, but like a disappointment, like they should at least be in that game.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. That's the expectation that's been set at Clemson, and it's carried over to their fans and to the media. I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that they're going to be there by any means. I think we all understand that, but at the same time, it is the expectation in South Carolina from from the mountains down to the low country where we are, and everybody understands that they have a talent level that I don't know if it's Alabama, but it is pretty darn close. And when you watch those two teams play right now, I look at them and say those are the two best teams in college football.
No, I'm in agreement on that one. So let's talk about Brent Venables, defensive coordinator, a name that has been a hot name for a couple of years. He is not, taking that leap and taking those jobs to be a head coach. Let's start with this. How much success do you think this Clemson program is sort of attributed to Brent Venables? So much about Dabo being the head coach and leading that program. How much do you think Brent Venables has had a hand in Clemson being in the spot that they are, sort of a perennial national championship contender?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Well, not only because he's an elite defensive coordinator, but he's an elite recruiter, and he loves Clemson. And that's one of the things that Dabo really searches for when he goes to hire a new guy, which there's not a lot of turnover in their staff. And, you know, so he gets the right guys in his program. He gets people that buy into his philosophy as a head coach, Clemson's philosophy as a university, as an athletics department, and certainly as a football program. And it's just been really a perfect fit for them. And I give a ton of success, a ton of credit to the success of Clemson to Brent Venables for what he's able to do week in and week out in calling plays, but certainly in getting players in the program.
How much do you think, Dabo would be all for the success of Brent Venables? You know, clearly he's that type of guy. But is there a concern of Dabo? Is like, you know, Brent Venables has been so good. He's been, you talk about the elite recruiter, the defensive coordinator, Clemson moving on and still being Clemson if Brent Venables isn't there. Is that likely? Is it, you know, Brent Venables is such a part of the success that if you lose him, there's at least a chance that Clemson isn't the Clemson that we think of and know of as it sits currently?
Well, I think you'd have to look more at a timeline. Like, you know, you might see maybe that trickle-down effect in, you know, 3 or 4 years. I think the immediate future is really good for Clemson, whether Brent is there or not, because the talent level is so elite. But, you know, you could look up in 3 or 4 years if he wasn't around and say, okay, this problem actually started 3 or 4 years ago. But, Dabo, again, he's so great at identifying the right guy. If Brent wasn't there for some off-the-wall reason, I feel very confident he'd still go out and find another elite defensive coordinator to come right in and fill his shoes.
What kind of a guy is Brent Venables? What's he like around with the media and players and things like that?
He's intense, but it's a good intense. He's fun. He's a guy. He's a player's coach. He is a program coach. And what I mean by that is he's the first one to tell you when you screw something up, but he's the first one to tell you when you do it right. And I think all players should probably want that. I know that those guys respect him tremendously, but they work really hard for him. He's great with the media. He's great with the fans. I mean, he's just an asset to the program.
What would you put as some of the reasons as to why, you know, he's still at Clemson? His name has been brought up so often, like every big job. But Venables, go get Brent Venables. And he's still there. I mean, he's paid a ton of money, but he's not a head coach. So what do you think the reasons are as to why he hasn't really taken that leap yet and taken a head coaching opportunity?
You know, I'll be honest. I think he's very comfortable where he is. He's got a son who's there. He's got another son who's coming into the program, I think maybe next year. And his family really enjoys it in the upstate. Obviously, you mentioned that he's paid handsomely, and I think that they live very well on that. And you know, I maybe he does, maybe he doesn't have a desire to be a head coach. I'm not too sure. But at the same time, you know, he's in a successful situation. He's in a situation where people appreciate him and he appreciates them. And it's one of those things, you know, Bud Foster's been doing this a long time at Virginia Tech. I don't know that he'll be doing it as long as Bud Foster, but he certainly is just very happy with his situation. And, you know, I think he feels very comfortable with the role that he plays every day. And I don't know that he has been ready to make the jump for more responsibility as a head coach, A, and B, I don't know that he wants the pressure of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe don't chase happy. You know, we talk about that all the time, that maybe you appreciate where you're at and you're loving life and enjoying life. Maybe if you're happy already, don't chase happier, you know, to a certain degree. If he's offered, you know, I'll ask it this way. If he's sort of waiting and enjoying life, would it take one of those marquee blue blood big time programs to lure him out of Clemson, that it'll be, you know, like Kirby Smart waited till Georgia opened up? If Ohio State and Urban Meyer steps down and Ohio State calls Brent Venables, or do you think it would be the timing's right, this is the job that's out there, I think it's good enough, I'm ready to move on, and this is just the job that's there, that's offered, that I like, and I'm not necessarily waiting for that big-time job, and I'll only take that?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a vanilla answer. It's probably not what you're digging for, but I think he would be willing to move on when he felt like he's willing to move on, if that makes sense.
No, I don't think...
Yeah, I don't think it has to be, you know, the caliber of a Clemson or a Georgia or an Alabama or an Auburn or something like that. I think it just has to be the right fit for Brent Venables and his family. He's a big family guy. Is it someplace that he has the desire to live for, you know, at least 4 or 5 years and things of that nature? The money, we know the money is there in football, in college football. We know that Louisville has the money. We know that Missouri has the money. Everybody's got the cash if they really want the guy. So I think he's just really, if he does have a desire to really truly be a head coach, it's someplace that he really thinks he's going to be happy as a human being first.
Yeah, no, that was a good answer, because it was like, okay, does it have to be a big job or sort of just timing and some other things that come into it as well? So Jamie Bradford, he is there in Charleston, ESPN Charleston 98.5, covers the Clemson Tigers, and Brent Venables, a name that Vegas installed as the fourth betting favorite to take over the Louisville Cardinals after Jeff Brohm, Neil Brown, Ryan Day, and then Brent Venables, 6-1, according to Bovada, to be the next head coach at Louisville. Thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it, sir.
Good to hear from you. Thank you so much.
We're going to California and Texas and New York.
To Syracuse, New York we go. Seth Goldberg, ESPN Syracuse 97.7. Seth, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Dino Babers, the name that some have thrown around here. Certainly, I've thrown that around. I think he's one heck of a coach, and Louisville can do a lot worse than, you know, hiring a Dino Babers. I'm curious of the view around there. When the job opened up and Bobby Petrino was fired, was there much discussion that Dino Babers' name would be sort of bantered about and discussed as a possible replacement for Petrino at Louisville?
Up here, no. Quite honestly, no. We had this a little bit a couple weeks ago when Maryland finally really fired DJ Durkin. You know, we had that discussion, and Dino's name came out almost immediately, and some fans got worked up, and they were like, oh, no, he's not going to leave for Maryland. Maryland's not a better job. It's not a step up. It's maybe an equal job. And I think that that first kind of wave of shock, and I don't want to call it annoyance, but that's probably the best word, of seeing that your coach is attached to another job, yeah. I think we got that first wave out of the way. And so now this Louisville thing came, and when you guys reached out to me, I was like, huh, Dino was named for Louisville. I didn't even see that. So I had to go and dig back and find that. But, yeah, I think that people are kind of over it. I think we know that his name is going to be thrown into the mix for certain jobs. Some jobs I think are more realistic than others. I think some jobs are essentially just a leverage play on his part, and that's what you do in college coaching. But no, here there wasn't much thought given to it.
Yeah, that was my first thought on Sunday. We were talking on the air when the news came down with Bobby Petrino, when we had Pat Forty on from Yahoo Sports, and he said, you know, he had an indication that there was mutual interest, that there was a reaching out of Dino Babers. And my first thought is, well, is that legit interest, or is that, yeah, hey, Syracuse, there's a number of people that are wanting me as the head coach. You know, maybe that contract gets up just a little bit. And to that degree, How high is Syracuse willing to go if it means keeping Dino Babers and the program heading on the trajectory they are right now? Is it to the level of, you know, I don't know what he makes right now, so I apologize, but is it four and a half? Can they go up higher than that if it means Dino Babers stays in Syracuse?
The number in the USA Today report, when they released their coaches' salary database, it was actually 2.5, and that was as of 2 years ago. So I don't think that number was as high maybe as people had thought it would have been, maybe around the country. I think here that people were almost surprised that the number was that high. And again, that number was of, you know, 2 years ago. I don't know, quite honestly, I don't know how much higher Syracuse is willing to go or can go. I seem to believe that they've got money. I mean, they're an ACC school. You know this from Louisville. ACC schools are bringing in, you know, record amounts of money for what ACC schools have ever brought in. And so I think that they've got the money. I don't know how high they are willing to go, because even paying Dino $2.5 million as of a couple of years ago, that's a step up from what they were paying somebody the likes of Scott Schaefer. So I'm not sure how high they're willing to go. And quite honestly, I'm curious if it's more a play for Dino to get more money or a play to get his assistants more money.
That's a good point.
I think that that is just as important. We've heard stories over the years of assistants that coaches have wanted to hire, have tried to hire, and just didn't have the money for them. So I'm curious if it's in that regard or as far as his salary goes. But either way, I do think Syracuse can pony up a little bit more. I'm curious to see how high they go.
No, I think it's a really good point about the assistant coaches. I mean, because there's a number of coaches that will do that, that'll play the sort of the game to get their assistant coaches a better contract, not necessarily for them. This is going to be an odd question, but I think it relates more to Syracuse than anything else. We've sort of discussed this, not that, you know, Louisville is, you know, Southern California, but he's from Hawaii, went to Hawaii, has coached most of his career on the West Coast in Arizona, and then slowly moved towards the East, and now he's in Syracuse. Do you think climate plays a role in Dino Babers' decision to stay, sign an extension, or take another job?
I think that's a really interesting question. I think that in recruiting, it certainly plays an effect, right? It's hard to get kids to come up from sunny Florida or somewhere in the South like Texas to say, hey, we've got this stuff called snow in the winter, and we get a lot of it. It's a hard selling point. I would say that as far as Dino goes, I think it would be a much more valid point, you know, if they had an open-air stadium. I think that for him, his playing style plays in this building, and it works because, you know, it's, for lack of a better term, it's 72 and sunny every game. And so I think that for him, as far as that goes, I don't think it bothers him. You know, he jokes around about the snow like anybody who lives up here. So I don't know for sure. I mean, if you told me that Southern California is coming to call, you know, if USC calls him up and decides to get rid of Clay Helton and says, hey, Dino, what do you think? I mean, look, that wouldn't surprise me, but that's probably the one job out there that I'm really looking at with Dino and saying, oh, that's a possibility. But I don't know that that's because of weather necessarily. I think it's just, you know, he's a West Coast guy. I don't know that it bothers him so much. And again, for his system, the Dome is as perfect as it gets.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong about that. You know, they're home games every year. You don't have to worry about rain or anything like that. Is the feeling around there that this is sort of a that this is a program or the momentum that will stay and maintain and continue in the future? Is there a concern this is sort of a 1 year special year? Like, what's the view of the program, I guess, with Dino Babers moving forward? Is it this, or is there a step back or two before, you know, it can get back to this level of being in the position that they may be playing in a New Year's Six Bowl?
I think the thing to consider about that is mainly the question that you're asking me in general here. Is Dino here or is he not? And if Dino is here, if Dino is sticking around, I think that people expect this to stay at a similar level. Maybe not 10 wins a year, maybe not 9 wins a year, but there's no reason this program can't win 7 or 8, I think is the expectation. You know, looking at next year, yeah, they'll lose Eric Dungy, they'll lose a couple senior offensive linemen, but I believe that the best running back and wide receiver that Syracuse has are not eligible to play right now. They're sitting out in transfers. So those are two guys that you add into the mix. And they've got a backup quarterback who, you know, we saw in the UNC game, who came out and just looked fantastic. So he would slide into that spot. I think that a lot of people up here expect that if Dino Babers stays, this is really sustainable, and this is really different than, you know, a one-off Pinstripe Bowl in 2010 or a one-off Pinstripe Bowl in 2012. It feels different this time around.
We'll see what ends up happening. Seth Goldberg, ESPN Syracuse, 97.7. Seth, great stuff. Very much appreciate the time, man.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati.
We do head to Cincinnati. We find our man, Mo Egger, ESPN Cincinnati, 1530. Mo, how are you, sir?
Jason, I'm great. How you doing?
I am doing just fine. I am curious. I guess before we get into like the particulars as it relates to Luke Fickell, I'm curious about sort of the anticipation and the build-up to this game against UCF, ABC, 8 o'clock at night. If it wasn't for that head-scratching Temple loss, this would be for the AAC and more than likely for the highest-rated Group of Five team. So what's the anticipation and the build-up like around there?
It's a lot of fun. I mean, first of all, it was so unexpected. I think your most optimistic, prognostications for the upcoming season was, man, if UC can just get to a bowl game, which obviously would mean six wins, that would be a success. You know, this was a 4-8 team last year. There was still a lot of holdovers from the previous regime, Tommy Tuberville's kids. And I think the overriding thought was, if they can get to six, maybe seven wins, that'd be a smashing success. And, now you have a game on Saturday night that I think it's their highest profile opportunity, really, since the two BCS bowl games they were in at the end of the last decade. College game day, obviously a lot of attention around UCF. I was watching the Monday night football game last night, and they spent some time talking about it, a lot of commercials for the game itself. Mm-hmm. You get the number one announcers on ABC, and so, I think all of that is really just viewed as a very welcome, very fun opportunity for this program and a well-deserved opportunity for this program. They've played themselves into a position, in large part due to a schedule that's been kind of underwhelming, but they've played themselves into a position where they've got a shot to not only win their half of the American Athletic Conference, but play in the conference title game and maybe get the highest profile bowl of all your group of five schools. That's pretty special given where this program was 24 months ago, when I think it was as close to rock bottom as you could maybe dig, unless Bobby Petrino's our coach. So this is a really special opportunity for this program. And you're right, you mentioned that Temple game, which they should not have lost. I think that's where a lot of fans are going to go. If they pull off the upset on Saturday, mm-hmm. they're going to go back to a kick that was taken off the board. They're going to go back to a controversial touchdown that I think you can argue shouldn't have counted for Temple. They were in control of the game late in the fourth quarter and let it slip away, lost in overtime. They're that close to going into this game undefeated, but still at 9-1, nobody before the season started thought this team would be where it is right now.
Yeah, and Utah State still has to go to Boise State if you're looking at some of the other Group of Five teams that are, looking at trying to be that automatic qualifier for the New Year's Six Bowl. Let's talk about Luke Fickell then. You mentioned this was unexpected. I'm curious of the view of Luke Fickell there with Cincinnati fans. Maybe, coming into this year, again, he's taken over for Tuberville. That seemed like the program was heading in the wrong direction. And in year one, it was a 4-8 team, and now 9-1. What was the view of Luke Fickell being hired at Cincinnati and the view that we've seen so far this year?
It was odd because, you guys are going through it now. The week between finding out that Tuberville wasn't coming back for sure and the introduction of Luke Fickell as the new head football coach, he wasn't anybody that we were talking about. Mm. People were throwing the name Jeff Brohm came up, the name P.J. Fleck came up. There's a beloved former high school coach here who was on Urban Meyer's staff at OSU, Kerry Combs, who's now with the Tennessee Titans. There were a lot of people who wanted him. I had people throwing the names of local high school football coaches out. I mean, it was, and this happens across the country whenever there's a vacancy. Everybody's trying to be as creative as possible and throwing out certain names. Nobody really mentioned the name Luke Fickell, and yet when the athletic director Mike Bone hired him, it just made sense. He's an Ohio guy. If this program is ever going to get going again, it's going to be on the backbone of recruiting in this region. Luke Fickell has spent his entire life in this region, basically a lifelong Ohio State Buckeye. He had the profile of the kind of guy that Cincinnati had success with before. which was up-and-comers, guys like Brian Kelly and Mark D'Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
Mark D'Antonio had been Ohio State's defensive coordinator before he came here. It was almost like when they hired him, we were like, well, duh, why weren't we talking about him? He just fit the profile. And I know a lot of people were, you know, maybe a little bit skeptical based on how bad that year was that he had to take over for Jim Tressel in 2011. And Luke would be the first one to tell you that he was in a little bit over his head, but he learned a lot from that. His introductory press conference was the antithesis of everything that Tommy Tuberville had been. It was businesslike. It was focused. You could tell that this guy was going to hit the ground running in recruiting. You could tell that this guy had a plan. He went out and hired some, I think, pretty highly qualified assistant coaches. The school spent some money on assistants. It really has been a honeymoon. Last season wasn't very good. Luke Fickell got none of that blame. He deserved none of that blame. He inherited a mess of a program, and I think there were a lot of people that thought he could get them back to where they are now, but I don't think anybody thought it was going to happen this soon. And so the attention he's getting or will get as jobs become available,
mm-hmm.
it's well-deserved because he has really, really done fine work with this program.
Yeah, he's been installed at Bovada as the fifth favorite, the fifth betting choice to take over at Louisville. Jeff Brohm, 10-11. Neil Brown at Troy, 4-1. Ryan Day at Ohio State, 9-2. Brent Venable, 6-1. And then Luke Fickell, 11-1, is the fifth favorite to take over the job here. But obviously, it's less than even money for Jeff Brohm, and that's where most people are focusing. I'm curious of what type of personality he is, because, you know, when we were on the air, you know, all day Sunday and kind of discussing different coaches, obviously it was Brohm, A through Z, as the choices. And then after that, you know, who else is there? And when Luke Fickell was brought up, there was just no sort of sizzle to it. Mike Leach, there was sizzle. Dino Babers, there was a little bit. Brent Venables. But you hear Luke Fickell, and it was just like, you know, vanilla ice cream or, you know, white paint on the wall or a brand new leather shoe. Like, it didn't have much of an excitement around it. What type of guy is he? Does he invoke excitement? Would he be a guy that, you know, offers the enthusiasm that the fans will rally around? Like, what kind of guy has he been there since he's been in Cincinnati?
You know, it's funny because this program really took off when it hired Brian Kelly. And Brian Kelly, it has an extraordinarily effervescent salesman-type personality. I mean, he's just – it's exactly what they needed at that time. And I think Tommy Tuberville kind of has that as well. The difference between those two is Tommy Tuberville would rather go play golf than run a football practice. And so that's kind of why the program was where it was. Tubbs was great in the press conference setting. He was great doing interviews. He was great up until the very, very end when he told a fan to go to hell and get a job. He was great interacting with the public. I think what this program needed was someone maybe a little bit more businesslike, and that's what Luke Fickell is. He's I wouldn't say he has the most dynamic, effervescent public personality. He is certainly accommodating. He is certainly friendly. But he'll understand he worked for a very long time under Jim Tressel. And so I think there's a lot of Jim Tressel to him.
Yeah.
And there's more, a hell of a lot more good than bad to that, given how successful Jim Tressel was at Ohio State. But I can see those similarities. He's probably not going to be a guy who's going to, you know, go pound the pavement, you know, getting people to want to buy tickets. What he will absolutely do, though, is recruit his face off. And you've seen those results here. They've done very well in this region, which Tommy Tuberville and his staff had ignored. But he's an all-business guy. He is a family man with six kids. I don't detect that he has a lot of outside interest beyond his family and coaching this football team. But I think that's what this program needed. Now, you would speak better to what the University of Louisville needs than I would, but I think his personality fit what this program needed at the time. I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago. I wouldn't have said that 15 years ago, but I certainly thought it was the case 2 years ago.
Yeah. Last one, and we'll let you go on this one. I know he's only been there 2 years, so I think length of time being there probably impacts his interest in taking other jobs. And plus, you mentioned he's an Ohio guy. If you were guessing, and Louisville made the phone call, do you think there would be interest from Luke Fickell for the Louisville job in the ACC?
Oh, absolutely.
From the AAC?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I think he understands the realities of just the differences between the two jobs. This is not a Power 5 job. The University of Louisville is. And despite some of the well-documented financial difficulties that school has had with legal fees and buyouts and everything, the opportunities there are a little bit more lucrative, a little bit more high profile. And let's face it, it's 100 miles from Cincinnati. If you can pull Chris Mack out of Cincinnati, I think you can pull Luke Fickell out of Louisville. And, I mean, look, he's a smart guy. At the very least, you do it for leverage sake and whatever you're trying to get from the University of Cincinnati. He's downplayed interest. He said today, you know, he hasn't paid attention to any of those things and sort of offered the same lines that every coach does this time of year when their name starts to be kicked around. But I think he would absolutely listen. I think he would listen to Louisville. And I think the really interesting thing would be if Purdue loses Jeff Brohm to U of L. Obviously, a lot of people there hope happens. I think it'd be interesting to see what would happen if Purdue showed some interest, just given, you know, Luke's background in the Big Ten. I think that would be worth paying attention to. But when they hired him, one of the things I thought that Mike Bone did that I really liked, the athletic directors, he said even before they settled on Luke Fickell, look, the formula here at the University of Cincinnati isn't a guy like Tommy Tuberville. It's not a guy who's reached the mountaintop and is coming down. It's these coaches who have stopped off at the University of Cincinnati, made the place better, made the program better, won, and then jumped ship to go somewhere else, higher profile and better paying. Mark D'Antonio did that, gone after 3 years, left the program in better shape than when he took it over. Brian Kelly went 34-6 in three seasons, left for Notre Dame. Butch Jones, it sounds odd because he inherited a program that had gone unbeaten in the regular season the year before, but Butch Jones really kind of got the program back on track after what was always going to be a rough 2010. He was gone after 3 years, left for Tennessee. That's what they do. That formula has worked here, and I think Mike Bone, he didn't shy away from that. And so I believe hiring Luke Fickell was done thinking, okay, this is the right guy for now. If it ends up being the right guy for now, down the road he's going to get opportunities. And all that we hope is he makes it a better job than when he took it over, and there's no denying he's done that.
Mo Egger, ESPN 1530 there in Cincinnati. Mo, great stuff as always. Very much appreciate the time. Enjoy the build-up to what should be a really fun game coming up this weekend.
All right, Jason. Thanks, man.
To Lafayette we go. We find our man Kyle Charters, 101.7 The Hammer there in Lafayette. Kyle, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Just been a busy week already, and it's only Tuesday.
I don't doubt that at all. When the news came down at about 11:20, everybody around here certainly circled the wagons. We got on air. We started talking about it. We've been doing it ever since. What was the reaction around Lafayette when the news came out that Bobby Petrino was not only fired, but it was immediately, and everybody knew who the Louisville fans wanted to be their next head coach?
I think the initial reaction was fear. Fear and then disbelief and then grief about all the stages that you could try and hit on, I think, in just a couple hours. You know, I think a lot of Purdue fans felt like this moment was coming at some point, that Purdue would have to deal with the Louisville threat, I guess, for a lack of a better way to put it. They didn't think that it would happen right now.
Yeah.
I mean, especially considering, you know, Jeff Brohm opened his tenure as Purdue's coach, taking on Louisville, a team with a Heisman Trophy winner that had, although the year before it had lost its last couple of games, had some hopes maybe as an outsider to be in the college football playoff. And, you know, Purdue played Louisville well in that opener, Lucas Oil, a year ago. And I just don't think anybody ever would have guessed that, you know, a short season and a half later, that this is when this moment would come.
Yeah, just the previous year of Louisville playing Purdue was Louisville in the college football playoff discussion. It's amazing how fast it's happened. You mentioned the different stages that Purdue fans are going through. Is there a feeling of sort of resignation that it's going to happen, that he'll take the job? Bovada installed him as the 10-11 favorite to be the next coach at Louisville, which would make sense because there's so much of the connection there. Is there a feeling like it's inevitable that playing out the last two games and then he'll be wearing or being on the sidelines of Louisville next year?
I don't think so. I think with some, maybe that's the feeling. I think maybe, though, with many, they feel like there is a chance for Purdue, feeling like perhaps that the timing just isn't right for Brohm to go to Louisville, that as a 47-year-old coach, there will be other opportunities for that to happen. I sort of equate it in some ways to Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. I know Harbaugh's tie to Michigan isn't quite the same as Braun's tie to Louisville, but there were opportunities for Harbaugh to go to Michigan before he ended up going to Michigan, and I could foresee that being the scenario here as well. And I feel like that's, you know, sort of the feeling too with some, at least in the fan base. Some are resigned to thinking he's leaving immediately. But I think there are some who think that Purdue still has an opportunity.
Yeah, I think of Roy Williams. He turned down North Carolina the first go around, and then the second go around said, "Okay, well, I'm not going to turn it down again." You know, he was leaving Kansas for UNC. The money aspect, you know, we've talked about it, that he's making almost as much as Bobby Petrino's making this year. And I've said that if Louisville's going to get him, it's not going to be a hometown discount. I don't think that's going to be the case at all, that they're going to have to start almost at $5 million a year if Jeff Brohm's going to take the Louisville job. If that's the case and Louisville goes to Jeff Brohm and says we're starting at five, does Purdue match? Does Purdue go over the top? Like, what do you think the money aspect is for Purdue to give to Jeff Brohm to say, no, we'll convince you to turn down, you know, the hometown, the sort of heartstrings to stay here because we believe in you this much and to this degree that here's what we're willing to invest in the football program?
You know, I don't know that I know the answer to that. Purdue, for so many years, was so stingy with coaching salaries that it's hard under the new regime with Mike Bobinski to sort of get a feel on what Purdue would do to open up the wallet a little bit. Now, they gave him a bump and an extension after last year in April of this year. Would they do it again? I suppose they would. The part that I think is so difficult to handicap in all this, you know, when we sort of examine coaching changes, a lot of times we talk about whether it's a jump or a lateral move or the money aspect or, you know, all the, you know, the roster, the program, what division it plays in, can you get to a national championship, all that. The problem is that literally none of us can say for certain outside of Jeff Brohm, his wife, maybe his kids, his brothers, Oscar, et cetera, is how strong is the pull back to Louisville right now?
Absolutely.
And outside of that handful of people, we can't answer that. So it's really hard, I think, to sort of know where the money factor comes in or the roster factor, all that other stuff, because we just don't know the big question. The big question is, how strong is that pull?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I've talked about this before. If there was no connection to Louisville, Brohm wouldn't take the Louisville job. He'd be at Purdue. He's in the right side of the conference. He's got a better chance of winning a national championship there than, you know, having to go through Clemson every single year in the ACC. But when you're talking about the first family of Louisville football being the Brohms and his dad and brothers and him and the connection then with Vince Tyree, the AD, and both those guys went to the same high school and all of that stuff, like, it makes it more and more difficult to say, no, thank you, I'm going to stay at Purdue. What about the facilities? Because I know that there's an investment there. Louisville clearly has invested a lot of money in facilities. From Purdue, I guess, as a football program overall, the facilities, where they're at, and the investment moving forward with that.
Yeah, they've taken a step up here in the last couple of years, spent $65 million on the new, what they call, performance center. It's got the weight room, the locker room, the lounge, football offices, you know, all that kind of stuff right there, centrally located, just off the indoor practice facility. You know, they have a south end zone project that will get underway at some point. There's no real solid timeline yet for that, but Purdue's got an open, basically, end of its end zone that some sort of project has to take place there. That I would imagine, you know, the next 3, 4, 5 years, somewhere in there. But Purdue's made some investments, more investments over the last couple of years with that performance facility. That was sort of un-Purdue-like when they did that, because it was just sort of a sudden, they announced it, and we're not only announcing that we're doing it, we're going to get it done in a year, and it's going to be a massive project, and Purdue did it, and it was pretty impressive. So, you know, they've made more strides here over the last couple of years with Mike Bobinski than what we had seen previously. Purdue's a lot more forward-thinking with that. A lot more willing to pay, a lot more willing to pay for staffs and assistants and all that. So it's a little bit of a changed culture around here. And I think, you know, when Jeff Brohm took this job, a lot of people told him not to. And they told him that because that was sort of old Purdue. I think he found that it's a little bit different feeling around here these days.
All right, we'll let you go with this. If you're guessing right now, Jeff Brohm next year is at Purdue or he's at Louisville?
If I'm guessing right now, I'll say Purdue, knowing that Louisville is still an option sometime down the line.
All All right, we'll see what ends up happening. Kyle Charters, 101.7 The Hammer, there in Lafayette. Kyle, great stuff. Certainly appreciate the time, and I have a feeling this may not be the last time we talk to you.
All right, sounds good, guys.
All right, there's Kyle Charters. There's our coaching carousel of trying to hit all of the names that have been talked about over the last couple of days. Again, Bovada installing Jeff Brohm as the favorite, 10-11 odds to take over. The next favorite, the next betting favorite, I think, is a surprise to those if you're looking at the names. Neil Brown is sitting at 4-1, and I don't know that that's one that the Louisville fan base would really wrap their hands around, with him being a UK guy and coaching at UK as well, and saying that UK is the show in town and in the state and all of that stuff. Ryan Day, the third choice at 9-2. The Ohio State offensive coordinator, Brent Venables, at 6-1. The defensive coordinator at Clemson. It's obvious that it's Brohm. There's a tier of three coaches: Neil Brown, Ryan Day, Brent Venables. And then there's a tier of the next coaches, which is Luke Fickell, Dino Babers, and Matt Campbell. But Vegas thinks it is obvious it is going to be.
Are you ready to get behind the wheel of a UPS tractor trailer? Seasonal tractor trailer drivers earn $32 an hour. Drivers must be at least 21 years of age, have a Class A CDL with T endorsement, 2 years of tractor trailer experience, and be able to drive a standard transmission. As a driver, you could participate in team driving, in-town runs, or help at a local UPS facility. Are you ready to get on the road? Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.